Before the show starts, several of our listeners have been curious about the work I do at OnSite. So I wanted to give you a quick glimpse into what I get to be a part of. OnSite's an emotional health retreat center on a beautiful 250-acre ranch just outside of Nashville. We've got some of the best minds in the therapeutic space that come and create a safe space, honestly, for people just to reconnect to who they are and who they're becoming. And if you want to learn more, you can visit onsiteworkshops.com or follow us on Instagram and socials at onsiteworkshops.
The work y'all are doing there is so important, and I feel so grateful that I've gotten to experience it firsthand. I really hope everyone gets to experience this sort of healing because we're all so deserving of it.
Thanks, my friend. Mm-hmm. Welcome to the show.
You are not born with fear. You are not born with hate. Those are things That's you right. pick up on yep. on your journey, mostly from an outside source. And I think... if you can try, do everything you can to keep that hate and fear of who you are out, and it's hard. I still struggle with it. I have, you know, insecurities and all of those things and thinking, you know, oh my God, my laugh is so loud, and oh my God, I'm so ridiculous, and I'm so extra, and I'm just all of those things. You deal with all of those things, but mm-hmm. I think I am doing what I'm doing, and I am who I am because I refuse to change that part of me.
Hey guys, I'm Miles.
And I'm Ruthie.
And welcome to the Unspoken Podcast, where we believe that saying the unsaid may be the hardest, but one of the most important things we can ever do.
Yes, our authentic self is the best gift that we have to offer this world. But sadly, we live in this culture that tells us that we should hide it.
So we would love for you to join us and listen along. And we hope that you might find connection and healing in the courage that no important words go unspoken. Make up fake love, make them all laugh. Come on, someone, take off your mask. It's nice to me. Today on the podcast, we welcome actress and singer Emmy Raver Lampman. Emmy is currently known for starring in the popular Netflix series The Umbrella Academy, opposite Ellen Page and Tom Hopper. She has also made appearances in hit series A Million Little Things, as well as Odd Mom Out. Emmy has acted in live theater, film, and television, making her big break starring as Angelica Schuyler in the Tony Award-winning Broadway musical Hamilton. Emmy will soon star in an independent feature Wednesdays opposite Jay Lee and Seth Green.
This was such a fun conversation getting to know Emmy, and honestly, Hamilton is just one of the most important messages in the world today, and so to learn from this beautiful soul that was a part of such a phenomenon was just such an honor. So we're so thrilled to share Emmy with you today. Thank you so much.
Oh my gosh.
I know that you are so busy. You just got home. You've been doing a whole press tour. Life is insane.
Bananas.
So we're so grateful that you took this time to do this with us.
Absolutely. I
mean, what's the press run been like for you?
Oh, it's been insane. And also unlike anything I've ever done before, because this is my first like step into TV and film, because yeah. I was doing, you know, theater in New York and Broadway for, you know, almost a full decade before I came out to LA, on the road in New York, in other cities, and there isn't a lot of press for theater.
Right.
If so, it's like one day, kind of maybe. But like when you're releasing a new show or a new movie into the ether, it's like a crazy. It's almost like a new like tool you have to learn, and like a muscle that you have to kind of figure out how to work. Because you know the. We'll do like a press junket, which they like, you know, buy out 6 floors of a hotel and you like sit down in a chair with some of your cast or by yourself. And there's like a backdrop of some scene from the show with like Netflix and the Umbrella Academy. And then there's lights, there's microphones, you're in fancy clothes, your makeup's done, your hair's done. And then like journalists will just like cycle through the room. So like some days you do like 78 interviews in like 5 hours. It's crazy. It's insane.
Oh,
and that's just like on camera stuff. And then you do like round table interviews where it's like you and a castmate sit at a table with like six journalists and they all kind of like ask you questions. It's like speed dating. It's the craziest. And you know, so then they sent us to Brazil. They sent us to London, Toronto, everywhere. They sent us a couple of the castmates to Singapore, Poland. Like they were sending us everywhere. Yeah, it was nuts. I've never done anything like it.
I'm tired for you. That's exhausting.
I know. And it's the funny thing is, it's kind of like a brain workout because, you know, unfortunately, you get cycled through the same questions.
Yeah.
You know, because. Yeah. It's a superhero show. That meat market is very saturated. And so everyone kind of wants to know why this one's different. And, you know, if you had a real superpower, what would it be? So, you know, but then you kind of start to figure out ways to make it fun. And, you know, some journalists will come in with games and those are really fun. I love a game.
Noted.
Love a game.
I'm a gamer too. Was it not the traditional sense? I've never sat in front of a screen and played, but I love games.
Like
group games, community games.
Oh, yeah. One that I really enjoyed when we were just in Toronto, that was kind of our last stop on the press tour, which was nice because we shot the show in Toronto. So it was almost like bringing it home. We did like a full day of press and then we did a screening for like the cast and crew that helped us out there, which they were amazing. So it was really nice to celebrate with them. But one journalist came in and had, it was me, Tom Hopper, and Ellen Page doing the interviews together. And he had like a hat and had all of our names in the hat. And he would ask the question and then we'd have to draw a name out of the hat and answer the question as if we were the other person.
Oh, that's incredible.
Because he was like, I know by now you guys have been asked the same question over a million times.
Right.
And you have also listened to each other answer these questions
a
million times.
That is brilliant. I love that so much.
It was so good. So he was like, I want you to, so here's the question, answer it as if you were Ellen.
Okay.
And I was like, I'm here for this game.
Yes. That is it was so good.
Yeah, it was so good. Then I felt like his 15 minutes flew by.
Totally.
Because then I was like, oh, we're done? I've just never, yeah. And I, you know, I was lucky enough that it's such an ensemble show that I was always paired with at least one other person. But it's like, you know, I don't know what I would do if it was just me. Do you know what I'm saying? Going to all of these countries and having to do like days and days of press by myself, I think I would like turn blue in the face. So luckily.
Is it stretch your personality? Are you exhausted? Or do you feel like you're naturally wired? Or is there any part of your life that conditioned you to have a public profession?
The interesting thing is when I was a kid, we had this like crazy wooden coffee table in our living room. And like from an early age, when my parents would have friends over for dinner or parties or whatever, I was always standing on top of
perform.
Yes, I was. And no one asked.
Yeah.
Nobody ever asked me. And so, you know, from like 1.5 on, I was just always performing on some ridiculous level. And so I think my parents instantly were like, ooh, that is a lot of energy that should not be in this house. We are going to put that elsewhere and figure out what it is that she wants to do. So it was like sports for a really long time. And then it was theater. And I don't know, it always kind of started with singing for me because my dad plays a lot of instruments and he's a really musical guy. And so I think music was always in the house and they have like an amazing record collection. So I just grew up listening to a lot of music. And so it started with music. And so going to theater, I think, was kind of the easiest, like, oh, well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But then I just think, you know, then I was doing it in middle school, doing community theater. And then I went to a performing arts high school. And then, you know, I blinked and I was like taking the SATs and looking at colleges. And then it was like, I guess I'll do this in school at, you know, in wherever it is I want to go to college, because it just kind of trying to do anything else didn't really make sense to me. Like wanting to go to med school or you know, any of that. I just was like, no, I think I like still need to be on stage. So I think it just, yeah, I don't know. I was never, I never had a fear of public speaking or.
So after doing one of these 78 interview days, it kind of fills you up, the little girl, and you're just excited? Or not that part of the job?
I think that part of it is, I think talking about the show and getting people excited about a thing that the cast and I have put so many like endless, tireless hours into, and the crew and the writers and our showrunner. And I think talking about the show and getting people excited, that gets me, I love that part of it. But I don't know if like, I don't know if there's an energy that I get specifically being in front of a camera talking about the thing. I think I'm just excited for it to exist on its own and like speak for itself and like educate people on it, I guess, if that makes sense.
But take us back to that little girl you were saying. We know now she's a performer. She wasn't. Exciting. What else? Introduce us to her.
Oh, man. Well, I grew up in Norfolk, Virginia. And my mom is a doctor of special education. She's like one of the smartest women I know. She's written over 15 textbooks. Like people like study her theories. Like she is the best in her field. It's really, really insane. And my dad kind of was a jack of all trades. He was a journalist for a really long time for our local newspaper. He was a travel journalist. He was a photographer. He's an author. He's got, you know, he has his own books. And so I kind of grew up in a very brain heavy household, which is so funny because then I was just running around wanting to sing and dance and parents are like, what? But I was adopted and I was adopted when I was 3 months old and I have an open adoption. So I have a relationship with my birth mom, which is like really, really awesome.
Wow.
Yeah. She's, I mean, at this point she feels like a really close, like older sister because she was only 17 when she had me. Knowing about her, and I've never not known that I was adopted, and she was definitely a part of my life, and I would get birthday presents from her and Christmas presents from her, and I always knew about her, but I didn't meet her until I was 18. Yeah, so I think my parents were kind of like, this doesn't really come from us, because my parents are so, they love school, and they love, you know, they're just really, 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 really smart, smart people and love learning, you know, new things, and my dad is like such a math brain, and I just was like, ew.
That does not fit for me.
I was like,
what the hell are these words?
Yeah, but you know, not getting good grades was not an option. Not going to college wasn't an option, which, you know, I was here for all of it.
That's so cool that they were open with you about that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking about an open adoption, but just adoption in general can be challenging for parents and kids to know how to navigate.
Absolutely.
But that they were saying all along, saying, yeah, I bet this came from your mom. And
Well, you know, because my mother couldn't have children. And so I think the way she saw it was my birth mom gave them the best gift in the world. Mm. So why would she ever try to you know, shut her out and make her feel like she wasn't a part of that? And, you know, but I also think every adoption story is different, and every family wants to go about it is different. But I think the thing that felt like it was going to work the best for them was to have some sort of communication and not totally close the door on and kind of be as open as possible with her. And but then, you know, they also had me not meeting her till I was 18 was like part of the agreement, and she never like had our address. So she, but that was like her ask, you know. She was like, I don't trust myself to know where you guys live because I might get curious, you know. So they put a lot of like groundwork down to kind of make it the healthiest situation as possible for me, you know, growing up. And so I wasn't ever confused as to who my parents were.
What was it? I mean, meeting your biological mom at 18 years old.
Oh, it was the thing is, so I had seen so many pictures of her and you know, like all through. So I knew what she looked like.
Do you look alike?
We have really similar like facial structures, but she's a shorty. So I definitely think I got my height from my birth dad. But we're very similar in personality, which, I think I thought I was going to see so much more of myself in her face, but it was really like in talking to her and getting to know her, I was like, oh, right. That is exactly where I get that, which is so crazy because like nature over nurture is like, it's like it could go either way. But like there are, I don't know, there are some like deep rooted like things of my
just
personality
in your DNA.
That, it's so interesting. But we, you know, we were, I was 18 and it was like right before I was getting ready to graduate. We met up at the mall. But I remember I was on the second level and I had parked my car on the second level. And so I was like walking down to get the escalator to go down. And she was like kind of standing at the bottom of the escalator.
Were you nervous?
Oh, yeah. I think I was nervous. But it wasn't like a bad nervous. I think it was just like,
sure.
Like, what? I don't, how do you even describe that scenario? Yeah. Do you know what I'm saying? Like,
yes.
It's just like meeting the person that is like, you are this person's like flesh and blood, but like you don't know them at all, but not in a bad way.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, the things that are important to know, but like knowing them on a personal level, you don't. So I just was excited to get to know her and like hear about her life and also hear her side of like the whole, what she's been doing for the past 18 years.
So you didn't know, like she would send you birthday cards and things, but you didn't really know about what was happening in her life.
No.
Mm-mm. Wow.
No. I mean, I knew, you know, she's a police officer. I knew she had started working in the DARE program and working with kids and also like funnily enough, working with like the Special Olympics in like her town. And so she started getting really into special education and children with needs. And so that was like a funny parallel to her and my mom. So yeah. I think, I mean, but her and my mom were really close. Like they talked a lot. Like they would, every couple of years would meet up and like, you know, so separately of me,
That's
they
incredible.
Had a relationship. Yeah.
I love your adopted mom. So that is so beautiful.
Yeah. It's crazy.
And so special.
But I think all roots, she was like, I'm not, you gave me a thing that I couldn't, I could have never had without you. Yeah. So like, I'm not going to shut you out of this experience because I wouldn't be here without you. Mm. So I like started going down the escalator and she turned around and we like locked eyes and like just tears started like falling out of my face.
Oh, sister.
But it wasn't even like, I just was, beautiful. I knew it. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And then we just like hugged and cried for like half an hour. I think everyone in the mall was like, what is happening to those two girls? But, and then we went and ate lunch and like, it was like a 5-hour hang and yeah. And she's like been like presently in my life ever since. I now have, I have a half sister who just turned 10. She's 20 years younger than me. It's crazy. Well, cause I, you know, growing up an only child, you're like, I just want a sibling. That's all I want. I'm always playing by myself. And then, you know, I moved to college and then I found out had just gotten married and found out that she was pregnant and was going to have a half, which is so crazy because we have similar faces, which is so funny.
You and your half sister.
Yeah. 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 And she's just like beautiful porcelain skin, strawberry blonde, like green eyes, but like our faces are identical. It's crazy.
Wow.
Yeah. And she's standing on top of standing on top of coffee tables. She's in ballet class. She is like, I actually just saw her. I hadn't seen her for like 2 years and I just went home to Virginia for Christmas this past Christmas. And she just turned 10, or she was about to turn 10. And she's just like the life of the party, just like cracking jokes and like loves to make people laugh. And
I bet she's in love with you. I cannot imagine how obsessed she, I mean, could you imagine? Like, I cannot imagine having you as my,
I'm just so excited for her to like be old enough to come like visit and for us to, you know what I'm saying? Like I've been so much older than her for so long that it's like, I just can't wait for us to like be gal pals. Like when she can come to LA and visit and, you know, we can go to New York and see shows together and which is soon. She's
special.
10. Yeah. Yeah.
So. That's how I am. I have 9 nieces and nephews. So I have 2 older brothers.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
The older girl, like I am so madly in love with them. And we like for each of their 16th birthday, they come and stay with me.
Oh yeah.
And it's just the most
it's the best.
Special, precious, amazing. I am so, and to have, you know, they're a part of my DNA. One of them, she's blonde and has more olive skin, but she looks just like me. Mm-hmm. And it's crazy. Like she looks so much like me. And then the second one has my exact personality. And she's going to be taller than me.
No way.
It's the wildest. And I'm like, I mean, I don't have children, but I had these girls that like, I met a girl a few weeks ago. I was getting neurofeedback and she goes, are you a Lindsay? Are your nieces at Camp DeSoto? She had worked at a camp 5 years before. And she was like, they look just like you.
No way.
5 years before.
That's
insane. She was like, they're Lindsay girls. Like I know that's your family.
Wow.
Is that not the craziest?
Genes are crazy. And you never know. That's also such a joy. It's like you never, I mean, you know, you have.
His son is his clone.
It's like you never know where, like what is going to rise to the surface. Like you never know like who they're going to look more like or like who's like genes from like 6 generations back, where the red hair is going to come from or like, you know, where the height's going to come from. Or it's so funny. It's just like it's such a gift. It's such a surprise.
Yes.
Because my dad was so, you know, freelanced a lot and worked from the home a lot. I think he was more so the stay at home parent. Yeah. And so I grew up spending so much time with my dad, and you know, he was my piano teacher. It didn't stick for so long. He's like, remember, I would never take, like, he was like, okay, you sing. Eventually it'll be important that you, like, play an instrument. And I just, like, wasn't having it. Now I'm so mad. Now I'm so mad because I don't play anything. It's like, oh, he knew, but I can never tell him that. You were right, Dad, if you're listening. You were right. So he, you know, tried with the guitar. He tried with the piano. He always tried to teach me. And I think at some point he was like, okay, I think the problem is that I'm teaching you. Like, you need a piano teacher. And so he took on this role of Mr. L. And so he would, like, leave the house.
Stop.
Drive around the block, pull up to the house, knock on the door, and then, like, would not drop the act of being Mr. L to try to get me to play the piano.
Oh, my God. He is my hero.
So every time I'd be like, Dad, stop. This is so stupid. He'd be like, I don't know who you're talking to. Okay, let's take it from the top of the scales.
Stop.
And be like, Dad, stop it. Really, like, stop.
How old were you?
Oh, like, maybe 10, between like 10 and 12. Like, I just was not having it.
That is absolutely incredible. Yeah,
it was the only chunk of time that he actually got me to learn anything on the piano was when he just, like, he wouldn't drop it. He was so method.
That's where you probably got some of those acting chops. Watching Mr. L take on this role.
And then he would, like, leave, drive back around the block, and then pull into the garage.
I'm obsessed with
him.
And
be like, hey, how was your piano lessons? And I'd be like, you were there. You were there. Don't pretend like you weren't just here.
I fell in love with your dad.
I'm gonna do that.
I love that. So, that's brilliant.
Oh, my God. And
truly.
Even to this day, he's like, remember Mr. L?
Stop.
I'm like, Dad, stop. Actually, stop.
That is incredible.
Such a nut. He's
Holy
such a nut.
Hell, that is absolutely amazing. And to not break.
Oh, he wouldn't. Even, like, I think I, like, cried at one point. I just out of frustration of being like, just stop it. Such a nut.
Thanks for sharing all that.
Of course.
I think we've had some other folks that we've talked to that, and in my line of work, I see a lot of people that come through adoption and it doesn't go so well.
Yeah.
Meaning, and the adoptive parents seemed like they were so intentional, love you so well, so connected that you, so your story of, in me as a parent who's considering adoption at some point, to hear how well it can go.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it also is a situation where she was given portfolios of couples looking for, you know, a child. And because, you know, my parents traveled a lot, they met in California and they did the Peace Corps together and they, like, traveled the world. And I think that was, like, a huge draw for her. And so she picked my parents, but, you know, that's not always the case. And that's not, and, you know, the mother or the parents wanting to be involved isn't, it's like, so you never, the biggest concern and the biggest one is a healthy, happy baby. Mm. And then, you know, to continue that later in hopes that it is a good adoption scenario is of course ideal, but there are so many babies out there that need loving families, and you never, like, where they are coming from isn't always, it can be anything. It could truly be anything.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
We both have a lot of friends that are in your line of work, either creatives or artists, singers, performers, actors, and I've always been drawn to creatives, married one, and I've always loved them, a lot of friends. They all describe something similar to me, not all, but most, that similar to you, they grew up and had kind of a performer gene in them. They were always, and hopefully they got parents who affirmed that and encouraged them, was like, I love what you're doing. Not always, but that was something they had to come overcome. But then when it turned into, like, a playful thing to where it was like, okay, now the art has to actually be distributed and sell and turn into a profession, it becomes a struggle at some age.
Oh, yeah.
Did you experience either young, current, now, a struggle with?
Yeah, I think it's so funny because my parents always only ever wanted me to be happy, whatever it was that I was doing. But I think being an artist, being an actor, I think it was a thing so far removed from anything that my parents have ever done in their lives. So I think they just were kind of the inconsistency, but most and foremost was the rejection related to it. Was like, that was really hard, I think, for especially my mom to stomach, just knowing like you are going to lead a life and you're heading into a career that is like so filled with no, that like, how are you going to sustain any sort of like life when, you know, it's also so unknown. It's not like you do this, this, and this, and then obviously you end up here where it is in a lot of fields of work. And so I think when I went to college for it, I think they were just happy that I was going to school. I think they were like, great, go to school, go to New York. If this is still a thing, like, I think it was like a maybe she'll grow out of it, but like, who knows? But they were never not supportive. I think they just were kind of always took the back seat to just be like, she'll find whatever it is that she wants to do that will hopefully make her happy first and enough to support herself and make a living. Because, you know, I was always a very independent kid. So, you know, my mom working in a university, I could have gone to any university in Virginia and for, you know, a really low tuition, if not full scholarship. And I was like, nope, going to New York.
Hey, y'all. We want to take a quick break from the conversation to tell you about the sponsor of this week's episode of the Unspoken podcast, our friends at Nasolo.
Yes, Nasolo is a sustainable brand committed to delivering handcrafted, ethically made shoes and accessories designed with comfort and functionality at the core, without the traditional retail markup.
I love how intentional this brand is. They are working to help combat climate change, and for every pair of Nasolo shoes sold, a contribution is made to help protect forests in the Amazon rainforest. Nasolo produces most of their designs in their own sustainable factory in Peru, and to offset their factory carbon emissions, they've partnered with the nonprofit Ecosphere to implement an insetting program. The program focuses on keeping threatened Amazon forests alive and protected while also creating sustainable livelihoods for its indigenous communities.
Their work is so cool, and not a lot of social impact companies have the results that they do. That's why I'm so impressed with them. And I love their shoes, by the way. But in 2018 alone, Nasolo customers helped save more than 54,000 trees from being uprooted from the Peruvian Amazon. That's the size of like 62 baseball fields.
Holy hell.
It's unreal. And one of the things I love about their branding is that the producers receive at a minimum beyond fair trade wages, healthcare, financial literacy trainings, and a safe working environment.
We're so grateful to be partnering up with Nasolo in this way. We love what they're about and have been floored by their support of the Unspoken. And Miles and I are both huge fans and wear their shoes all the time. I brought you to the store for the first time years ago when we first became friends.
I've been a fan ever since. So it's so fun to partner with these guys and just be a part of the impact that they're making. So Nasolo is partnering with us this season to offer Unspoken podcast listeners 25% off their first purchase. So go to nasolo.com and enter code UNSPOKEN at checkout to get 25% off your order of men's and women's ethically made shoes and accessories. That's NISOLO.com and use Unspoken for 25% off your first purchase. All right, you guys, back to the conversation.
At one point, I remember telling my mom that I was like really excited to be like a struggling artist. And not in the sense of like, I can't wait to not have any money, but I think I can't wait to like, to really have to like deep dive for my craft and to not want to do anything but that. Like, sure, like, of course you have to have a survival job. You have to wait tables, you have to nanny. I did both of those things for a very, very, very long time in New York. But I think I was just excited to like feel that like angsty, like, I will do whatever I have to do because this is what's so important to me, even though I don't have two pennies to rub together. Yeah. And again, she was like, I don't know what that means, but okay.
What are these words?
Truly. And, you know, I have been so really, really lucky. And I think, sure, there have definitely been lulls in my career as an actor. But I think because because I was so driven as a kid and because I was so independent. And, you know, I got my first job when I was 13 working in a bagel store. Like I have never not had a job, mm-hmm. regardless of if it's in my field. So I never, you know, I never got to that point where I was, you know, having to ask my parents for money, but it wasn't because I didn't have any money. I just was like, okay, cool. I gotta wait tables. I got a nanny. I was like cleaning my friend's like Airbnb for a while. Like I just have always done what I needed to do to pay the necessary things so that I could still be over here trying to be an artist, regardless if that was paying me or not. Mm-hmm. I think I've had, you know, plenty of times where I've just been like, will I ever act again? TBD. Yeah. But I think it was never that as well as I might have to leave New York because I can't afford an apartment because I, even now, like, you know, it's like, yes, I have this amazing TV show that I'm so proud of and I'm doing a thing that's so exciting and there's a, like, you know, hopefully a lot of eyes on it and all of that stuff. But if I ever get to a point where it's like money's not coming in, I will for sure go back to bartending. I think that's just like a thing that is like in me, that it's like, I will do whatever I need to do to pay, to keep the lights on, because at the end of the day, I need that in order to be over here making art and feeling fulfilled as an artist.
Yeah.
So it's like I've always seemingly found the balance, if that made any sense.
Totally.
That's so good. I've never heard it called a survival job either.
Oh, yeah.
Those are so, so important. Mm. You said, so that I can continue to be fulfilled as an artist. What else fulfills you?
Oh, man. I really love, this is like, I love to travel. Traveling is like, I get antsy when I don't travel. And I also think this is, I traveled a lot growing up because my dad was a travel journalist and they did the Peace Corps together and I've traveled my whole life. I've been to like over 50 countries and I lived in the Ukraine. I lived in India. I lived in the Czech Republic. Like I've lived in, you know, all over the world. And so I think from a really young age, like getting on a plane and going very, very far away and like fully submerging myself in like a different culture and a different way of life and a different place has like been something that like I need. And so when I go a long time without traveling, I start getting itchy. Like I just need to get out. I need to get out. So traveling is for sure a thing that fills me completely in the same way that I think, you know, being an actor does. I think just, you know, opening your eyes to just a different world and a different culture and a different people. It's just something, different cuisine. Oh, the food.
Yes.
Mostly the food.
Mostly the food.
Always the food. So yeah, I just think that's like my second big fit. But then I'm like a big crafty person. I love crafts.
I love that.
I drive all
like
my friends crazy with my, so right now it's macrame. Oh God, don't get me started.
Amazing.
But it's like anywhere from like knitting to macrame to, oh gosh, truly anything. I had a jewelry line on Etsy for a while. So many things.
That is amazing.
But I have a hard time sitting still. So even, you know, I like love the concept of Netflix and chill, but like my hands have to keep moving.
Yeah.
So it's like if I'm knitting or if I'm like making jewelry, like I think I have a hard time sitting still. So crafts, doing a craft, making a thing is kind of how I level it out a little bit.
I want to hear a little bit about, I can't really wrap my head around it at all, but like the phenomenon that has been Hamilton.
Oh, yeah.
And what that's been like as a woman of color.
Yeah.
Getting to be a part of something so important.
Yeah.
And so relative to our culture today.
Yeah.
It's so important.
Yeah.
Like seeing that. And of course, we're watching something from, you know, forever ago. But then you're like, it's so wild how this is truly exactly the voice that we need to hear at this moment today.
Yeah.
In these times. I would love to hear. I mean, I can't imagine being on that ride.
Oh, it was the craziest. None of us had any idea. Any idea that it was, and I think we were all just sitting over there hoping that people would come to the show. Do you know what I'm saying? It's like, I remember when I auditioned and my agent was like, okay, Lin-Manuel Miranda, wowie, tongue twister, Lin, he's written a new musical. It's about Alexander Hamilton. It's completely sung through and there's like rap involved.
Come and say, huh?
One more time. And I was like, ah. And I like just come back from, I was on tour with Wicked for like a year and a half. So I'd like just come back from that. And I was like, that sounds crazy. I don't know if anyone's going to go. And I was like really hesitant to audition because I had seen In the Heights, but like I just was like, that just sounds crazy. But I was like, okay, sure. Like, why not? That could be insane. And then, you know, fast forward to a couple months and it's just, we're opening this thing on Broadway that before we'd even started rehearsals on Broadway had already sold $17 million in advance ticket sales.
What?
Isn't that crazy?
I did not know that.
$17 million in advance ticket sales.
How do you explain that?
Yeah, help us.
I wasn't a part of it when it was at the Public. So it was at the Public Theater for 3 months. That was kind of like the out of town, in town tryout of it. And I think it just popped off so fast there. Like the Clintons went, Madonna went, Michelle Obama went. And I think you couldn't get a ticket because it also was in a theater that had 350 seats. So it just like the tickets went on sale and it was sold out because I think one, it was Lin. Right. And because of his success with In the Heights, I think everyone, all of his fans of that were just so excited to see him in this. But then I think it just kind of became this word of mouth. And then like celebrities that like, you know, Michelle Obama, while she is still sitting, like her husband is still sitting in the White House, like coming to New York to see an off-Broadway show is crazy. Do you know? So I think it just, the word of mouth really started to fly. Because I remember being out on tour and hearing about it and people being like, Lin wrote this new show that's like at the Public and like people are freaking out about it. There's no video. There is no soundtrack. So it was just this very like secretive thing that had happened for 3 months. And like, if you saw it, you saw it. And if you didn't, you missed out. And so I think when it was transferring to Broadway, I think that little like secret kind of, you know, je ne sais quoi was like, people just had to know.
Yeah.
And so I think that it just snowballed into this crazy, crazy thing. And then, you know, we recorded the album and then that got nominated for Grammy and then it won all these Grammys and then it just, you know, and then like Barack came and then it just, you know, Jay-Z and Beyonce came. It just like turned into this crazy. It was crazy. It was the craziest 9 months of my entire life because also like none of us, I think I'm still dealing with it.
Yeah.
It's been, you know, over 3 years and I think I'm still kind of like, what happened? I think it just, we were constantly in this state of like,
history was made and you were a part of it.
Yeah. But from the inside, it was like, so not that. It just was like, we're telling this awesome story where like, race doesn't matter and we're kind of like breaking all the confines of like typical musical theater and we're telling the story with our bodies, with our voices, with our, you know, with every part of us. And we were like this really close-knit family. And then there was this whole, you know, for lack of a better term, hurricane like happening outside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think, you know, every day we focused in and did the work for 3.5 hours every day. And then what was happening outside was happening outside. Mm-hmm. And I think we were all trying so hard not to get wrapped up in it because it just, I mean, there would be like 500 people at the stage door every night. Jesus. It would take you just as long to sign all those autographs as it took you to do the first act of the show. Like it just became like this, like they would have to shut down 46th Street after the show because there just would be too many people it would take over the sidewalk on the other side of the street.
That is crazy.
Yeah. So it was nuts. It was so nuts. And I think the funny part is, so Leslie Odom Jr. like originated Burr. And then when I went to do it in Chicago, Joshua Henry was doing Burr. And then when I did the tour in LA, Josh was also doing Burr then. And I remember the first time one of his understudies went on, this kid Ryan, he went on and for Burr. And I was like, oh, right. Burr was white. Like it was, do you know what I'm saying?
Like, wait, this feels so odd.
It's just like in my mind,
right?
Aaron Burr is a black man.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? And it just was so, and suddenly the whole story was like so different being told by this like young, unbelievably talented white guy. I was just like, oh, right. How quickly I have forgotten that like it just, the story is so good regardless of like the color of your skin. And like these stories are so unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And it's just like you, that was like such a funny realization. It had been like 3 years and I was like,
wow.
Because I think up to that point, all the other, you know, the understudies on Broadway were all of color or, you know, so I just think it just was such a funny, I was like, oh, right.
That
this technically
wild.
Is like a white man's story, but I have like, and now it's like completely, history has rewritten itself in my mind because of the show.
Whoa.
Yeah. So
that's
funny.
That's a strong statement.
Right?
Wow.
Just because they cast the best person for the role. Colored, that's what it was. And right. that, I, you know, Lynn and Tommy and all, you know, the creatives behind the show got asked that question all the time. Like, why did you, like, why? And it wasn't like, they didn't actively seek out casting people of color for the show. They gave the roles to the people that deserved it best.
Yes.
Because it didn't matter who was telling it.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah.
Wow. Were the lights up enough in the audience for you to see Jay-Z and Beyonce watching you perform?
Oh, well that, yeah.
Did you freak?
Yeah.
I would freak out.
I would have.
So here's the thing.
Oh, because the President of the United States too, but Jay-Z and Beyonce.
You know, the funny thing is, so I mean, truly name, this is so sad, name like a celebrity in the past 4 years, dead and unfortunately dead or alive. Like, you know, Prince was there. Like a month before he died, Prince was at the show. Alan Rickman. It's just like so many unbelievable actors and actresses and musicians and singers and politicians like came through those doors and you forget.
Right.
Like, I think at first you hear that they're there and you're like, oh, crazy. And then the show starts and you forget.
Yeah.
I have never been one to get starstruck. I always like rationalize it in my brain. I'm like, if I were them, what would freak me out? Do you know what I'm saying? Or like, what? Do you know what I'm saying? It's like, so I just have always been like, just keep it cool. They're human. You're a human. Yeah. I respect the hell out of their talent. Like what they do is unbelievable. They're like, that is a game changing person right there. That's amazing. And I love meeting them on a very like human level. And I also think because they were coming to the show and they would come backstage and we would meet them all afterwards. I think they were truly just as like, whoa, as
totally
we were, which is
awe.
So funny.
Yeah.
But the Richard Rodgers in New York is really, it's not deep. So it's really, so the audience is really smushed towards the stage. Like the front row, their chins are on the stage. Like you, so the light from the stage, you can see, and I have crazy eyesight, so I can see the last row of the balcony.
Whoa.
So whoever was there, even if we weren't told that they were there, they were usually within the first 10 rows. So you could always kind of see who was there. And like, luckily enough, I was usually lurking in the shadow. So I would always be like checking in and be like, are they into it? Can't tell. I think they're into it. But, you know, I mean, Oprah, Katy Perry.
Stop it.
Oh, yeah. Like, truly.
That's his number one.
Truly, yeah. Monica Lewinsky. Yes, girl. I was actually living for Monica. I was totally here for it. Everyone was like, Monica Lewinsky's here. I was like, yes.
Why?
Because she's iconic for the craziest thing.
Iconic.
Like, that is crazy.
Which,
to actually meet, you know what I'm saying? When, like, I would say not even months before that, like, the Clintons had also been there. So it's just like such a, it just was like,
which, by the way, my brother this weekend went to see To Kill a Mockingbird, which is incredible. I saw it last month, but Bill and Hillary were right behind him.
Oh, they're like huge. I think she went down to Puerto Rico like 2 months ago when the show was down there. They're huge fans. But I think the only person that I actually like wept was when Obama came. Like wept, because that's
huge.
Like a game changing.
Yes.
But like they had to do background checks on all of us. They had to like completely shut down the theater. They had to like do full searches. Like all of Times Square was shut down. Everyone in the audience had to go through a metal detector. It was like all of the guns that are used in the show had to be like vetted by the Secret Service. Like it was a huge thing. It was crazy.
Yeah.
Because you know Michelle had gone downtown, and so he came with the girls. It was insane. Like they bring the house lights down for the start of the show and then they sneak him in. But it was like sneak him in. The entire audience was like up on their feet, like full standing ovation. Like, and I just remember standing in the wings waiting to go on and just like tears were just like rolling down my face. I was like,
I cannot imagine.
This is crazy. And then began like the most ridiculous relationship with the Obamas that I've like he came with the girls, and then Michelle came again after that, and then the DNC bought out an entire performance, and so we did an entire performance for the entire DNC, and then he came on stage after and gave a speech to the DNC, mm-hmm. so we got to, like, sit in the wings while he gave a speech. And then, to top it all off, they invited us, the entire cast, to the White House to do, like, a private concert version of the show. But, like, when we met them that day, they greeted each of us by our first names.
Stop.
Dead.
Stop.
I was like, hi, Michelle.
Oh, they are?
And I was like, I think I'm supposed to call you Madam First Lady, but, like, you're Michelle. You're family now, I think. I think I can call you by your first name. I was like, hey, Barack, what's up?
So incredible.
But they're, I mean, you know, so that was really it. And Prince, obviously. Mm-hmm. I didn't get to meet him, but I saw him.
Why the tears for Barack?
Because he was, you know, he was on his way out. It was, like, nearing the end of his second term. And I think, and I also just think, like, to be in the same room with that energy in solely, I'm speaking for myself, just, like, someone who I feel has, like, changed the game in such a crazy way. I think it was, like, a humbling experience more than anything. I think I just was like, holy cow. Because, you know, going to any sort of live event when you are the president is not an easy feat. So the fact that, like, going through all the rigmarole for him to be there and to bring the girls was just like, whoa, okay, maybe we're, like, on to something here. And, you know, he came backstage at intermission and, like, hung out with all of us, like, because he didn't really have anywhere to go. So they're like, we'll just bring him back and you guys can meet him and take pictures with him then, because after the show, he has to be the first person to leave before the audience can leave. And so they're like, if you guys want to meet him, like, he has to come back at intermission. And we were like, right? I was like, let me check my schedule.
I cannot imagine.
But I just think I was so, that family. I mean, it's the same reaction that, so I started reading, but listening to Becoming. I bought the book and started reading it. And then I heard that she reads the autobiography or she reads it. And so I was like, oh, forget this. Like, chuck the book over my shoulder. And the second I hit play and I heard her voice, I was like on the treadmill at the gym. I just almost fell off the treadmill and I was crying just hearing her voice again. I mean, it was the same thing that happened at the Grammys 2 weekends ago.
Yeah.
She, like, opened her mouth to start talking and she got a standing ovation. Do you know what I'm saying? Oh, yeah. Yes. And she had to quiet the audience, but it's just like, they have this, like, magnanimous like energy, and they were just so much a part of the Hamilton experience for me.
There's this phrase we use a lot in therapy type circles, which is the space I work in, the emotional wellness space. And it's when someone really admires a quality about someone, usually there's a mirror moment there. It's just called spot it, you got it.
Yeah.
And so if I were describing my experience in sitting with you, it would be exactly what you said about Michelle Obama.
What? You made me blush. I am blushing. I can feel it.
He sees you. It's the truth.
Thank you.
Special.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And magnetic.
No.
Yes.
I don't know what I'm doing. Truly in this life.
Whatever it is, it's working.
Yeah. I'm just following that happiness. That's really, I think I got that from my parents. And I think, so my parents met. This is a crazy story. I mean, there are so many crazy stories. My parents are insane. But they met and they both wanted to go into the Peace Corps. And when you go into the Peace Corps, unless you're married, you'll usually get separated. They can't guarantee that they will keep a couple together unless you're married. And so they were kind of like, well, let's just get married. And then when we come back, if it's not working, we'll just get divorced. And like 40 plus years later, they're still together.
Wow.
Yeah.
How long had they been dating when they did that?
I want to say just like not very long. I'd say less than 3 years.
Wow.
Yeah. But it just was very much a, like, we really want to do this. We want to experience this together. Mm. And so they went to Ecuador for like 3 years.
Wow.
3 years. Yeah.
The Obamas have taken their gifts, which you so eloquently describe some of, and used them quite well, and still are, for social impact and just doing good in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And hearing me earlier say, I see that. Yeah. I see you having this gift well beyond what you're doing even professionally now. And I don't even know what else you do, but how do you see yourself using your gifts for good in the world?
Oh, man. There's two sides of it where the fact that you have asked me that question is like truly a humbling moment because I don't think I ever, like little Emmy standing on a coffee table, I don't think I ever set out to like, in my wildest dreams, I don't think I would ever have been thought that I would be in a position to have an active impact on someone's life or that what I was doing would reverberate within someone or you know, have like a lasting impression. I think I purely kind of set out to find my happiness and to find what fulfilled me. And I think, honestly, I think living my life that way and leading my life striving to find that is, I think, what I try to put out the most, that it can sound so cliche and or impossible or, you know, difficult or, you know, but I think I have truly tried to lead my life by doing what makes me happy. And when it stops making me happy, I don't do it anymore. And I think one of the biggest examples I have in my life is, and this isn't coming from a place of being unhappy, but I left Hamilton after 9 months. I left the show before the Tonys. I left, and I was the first person to leave the cast. And, you know, so many of my friends were like, that's crazy. Like, you're in the biggest show that's ever happened potentially in our, like, for our generation. And, you know, the one after and the one before, like, why are you leaving? And I left because I had been a part of another show for like a couple years before Hamilton had come about. And that show was kind of getting ready to take its moment and like head to Broadway. And like, you know, I had like a feature and like the role that I had been doing in the show had like gotten bigger and bigger and bigger the more that I had done it. And so I was kind of finding my own voice and kind of taking a step out of the ensemble and kind of, you know, I was just like, oh, this is a new experience for me. This is something that I'm excited to head down a new road and be challenged in a different way. People didn't understand that, but I think I, in that moment, was just following my curiosity and following my next step to happiness. It had nothing to do with not being happy in Hamilton or being a part of that cast or doing that show every night. It just was like, there's another road over here that has like a completely different experience that's going to fill me in a completely different way. Yeah. And I have to figure out and find out what that is. Mm-hmm. But I also think I voiced that so clearly I wrote an email to Lynn and Andy, the choreographer, and Lack, the music coordinator and orchestrator, and to Tommy, the director, and was like, please don't think that I don't want to be a part of this show, but I hope that you know that I'm following my heart. Mm-hmm. And they all understood that so much that I then went back to the show two more times after that. Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, it was never like, oh, she doesn't want to be a part of this. It just was like, we see you. You, as an artist, that is so important. So go do that. Mm. And like, you will always have a place here. And then, you know, within a year, they had asked me to go do the show because I was already in Chicago. They're like, hey, you're in Chicago. Your show just finished. Do you want to stay in Chicago and do Hamilton in Chicago? And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. So I think it's just, I've just tried so hard to lead with that. And I know it's not the easiest thing. And for sure, I was waiting tables and never thinking I would, you know, get another job or get another, you know, artistic experience that would fill me the way that I want. But I also think that that is why I'm always still hungry for more, because I think, and it's the reason I have a hard time sitting still, because I just think there is so much. And I think it's also because I've traveled so extensively in my life. There is so much out there to experience. Mm-hmm. And you never know in what shape or form happiness is going to come. And so I think I'm just always kind of chasing the thing that feels right. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes you're like, whoop, that was a mistake. But like, okay, cool. Like, I'm not, no skin off my back. That was still a crazy experience. Yes. And like, now I can talk about it and for the good reasons and for the bad or whatever it is, and grow from it and learn from it. And also know that like, I don't need to do that again. Cool. That's so the next time I'm like, intrigued by a similar scenario, it's like, you did that already. It wasn't what you wanted. So didn't like, fit. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So I think, I don't know if that answers your question
at
all.
It does. Love it.
Beautiful. It reminds me of Glennon Doyle talks about when you get quiet and get still, just choosing the next best or the next right thing for you.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That could be totally different. But I always attribute it like when I'm trying to make a choice or decision, because we always have the answers inside of us. Mm-hmm. And when I get really still, I'm like, what makes me feel like I'm going towards the light?
Yeah.
Does my gut, my intuition, does it feel like I'm going towards light? And if I do, then I'm like, that's it. And it might not make any sense.
Oh, absolutely.
Whatsoever. Yep. But I'm like, that's what my intuition and my gut says, so I'm going to follow that.
Yeah.
And I like a big part of why we're doing this is that to help a lot of young people, kids that look up to people like you, don't get the opportunity to see the person behind the profession. Mm-hmm. And I love that you answered it that way, because you could have said, well, I'm going to do these 10 things professionally, and that's how I'm going to get back to the world. You were like, no, I'm going to live my life this way.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's how I hope the world can benefit from me being in it. And I think they will.
Yeah. And I it's interesting you say that, because I am very list oriented. You know, I love a grocery list. I love a I love a task list.
Scratching things off.
Yeah, but I've never, you know, some people have that 5-year, 10-year plan, and I've never been one to put that sort of expectation on myself, because I think, one, it's not fair, and two, life will throw you the craziest curveballs. And then you find yourself in a tricky place of like trying to get back on whatever track that it was that you were trying to be on. And I find and feel like sometimes that can lead to, like, you know, the craziest, like, self-destructive kind of, I've fallen off this thing and I have to do whatever it's going to take to get back, as opposed to just like, oh, that was a crazy curveball. Now I'm over here. What's over here?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's opposed to like, I don't care what's over here. I have to get back there.
Right.
And so I just always take it as it comes. I kind of, I try not to put any expectations on truly tomorrow, truly 20 minutes from now. Do you know? It's just, I really try to live in the moments. And like, I never, I'm so bad with like taking pictures when I'm doing things, because I get so caught up in like being in it. Yeah. And then like a week later, I'm like, I have no pictures of that night. I'm getting so mad at myself. And then I'll be like, okay, next time I'm going to take more pictures. And then they'll be like the first 3 minutes I took pictures. And then like the next week, just like, which is good. I think that's so important to just kind of let, you know, always have things that you're striving towards and things that excite you and things that you're like, that would be cool. I'd love to do that one day. But I just think like it gets tricky when you get so stuck to a list or a regimen of some sort of expectation on your life. Yeah,
that you're missing right now.
Yeah, because you're looking at this list and you're looking at 10 years as opposed to 10 minutes. And I just think you're missing out on, you know, every breath is a gift. Yes. And I think every moment is a gift. And when you're so focused on what's gonna happen, you're missing what's happening.
That's right.
Well, based on what you know now, little Emmy on the box.
Oh, God. this is actually funny. When my parents are actually moving out here now that I like live out here. My dad's actually from Pasadena. So I have a ton of family in Sacramento, and they're moving and they're like, do you want anything in this house? Like, they're getting rid of everything. And I was like, that box.
I need the box.
It's the only thing. Yes. And it has all, it's like this size and it has all of their records in it.
Oh.
And I was like, just put that on the truck. That's all I want. I don't like any of like my child. It's like, bring what you want. I don't, you know, I'm sure my mom will bring boxes of photos, but you know, I don't need baby clothes or, you know, science fair projects. I'm just like, just bring that box, the like coffee table and all the records inside. That's all I want.
If you could give her one message based on what you know now, or for all the little Emmys out there standing on boxes right now, what would you say to her?
I'd say, keep going, girl. Like that's the beauty of being a child, is there's like this wild spirit. My parents never tried to shush it or dim the light or dim the wildness. Like, I was crazy. They were like, we're going to just stop giving her candy. And then like, but other than that, there's nothing we can do. And I just think, we are growing up and we're, you know, you grow up and try to like, it gets stifled or quieted and you run into people that tell you you can't or you shouldn't or you never will or any of that. And I just think you are not born with fear. You are not born with hate. Those are things you pick up on your journey, mostly from an outside source. And I think if you can try, do everything you can to keep that hate and fear of who you are out. And it's hard. I still struggle with it. I have, you know, insecurities and all of those things and thinking, you know, oh my God, my laugh is so loud. And oh my God, I'm so ridiculous. And I'm so extra. And I'm just all of those things. You deal with all of those things. But I think I am doing what I'm doing and I am who I am because I refuse to change that part of me.
Mm-hmm.
And anytime I would meet someone who would, I was like, you know what? I don't actually need you in your life because you're, I do something, there's something in me that you're embarrassed about and I'm not here for that. I'm not here to spend
those
any time with you.
People.
Yeah.
Well said.
I love that. This was such so much.
Awesome. Guys. Thank you.
Of course. Are you kidding? You this was so good. I feel like I talked the whole time. Well, I'm sorry. I didn't ask you guys a single question.
Sister, we're here to learn about you. This was perfect.
Oh my God.
Speaking of, you told us all about the show that you're working on in the beginning. Can you tell us the name of it?
Oh, yeah. It's called The Umbrella Academy. Yeah. It's streaming now on Netflix,
which is
so crazy. So if you like, you know, super dysfunctional crime-fighting superhero families, it's
sign me up.
Well, no, let me
right
say this. If you like what you just heard, then sign up for this thing because you're in it.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Looking like a true Beyonce.
You are a queen.
Oh, my God. The wig. The wig.
I love it.
Listen, I'm 2 months away from being a dad to a daughter.
Oh, man. It's so great.
And I'm so excited because I just think it's a good time to raise a baby girl
in
today's climate. But I just want to say to you, my impression from spending an hour with you is that I hope she picks a role model to look up to like you.
Oh my, you're gonna make me cry.
Oh.
With the zingers, this one.
All the zingers.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, well, she is so lucky to have you.
Oh, thank you.
Truly.
Oh, thank you so much,
of course.
Sister.
Thanks, friends.
Treat. We are so grateful.
Make up, fake love, make them all laugh. Someone, take off your mask. It's nice to me.
Thank y'all so much for being with us today. We know your time is valuable, so it truly means the world to us that you would spend your time and energy with us. And thank you for being willing and open to walk right into the tension of saying the unsaid. The music from our podcast is from one of my favorite bands, Oliver Riot, and this song is called Alcatraz from their EP, Hallucinate. I cannot speak highly enough about these musicians and friends. Check out their beautiful music on Spotify and online. And a huge thank you to Chad Michael Snavely and the team at CM Studio who edit and mix the show.
If you want to learn more about The Unspoken Podcast, please go to theunspokenpodcast.com for show notes and more information about the guest. And feel free to follow us on Instagram as well at The Unspoken Podcast. Make sure you hit subscribe to keep getting more inspiring conversations with incredible people delivered straight to you. And for those of you who are regular listeners to the podcast, please consider supporting the show by leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts. We can't wait to share with you all of the upcoming conversations with some really special people. And we hope these fill you with the hope that we might all find connection, healing, courage, and the strength to leave no important words unspoken.